All right, so today is the 25th of 2018, the 11th of Sivan, the day before the 12th of Sivan. And then the 13th, we begin saying Tachlin again. Not the 14th, 13th. Unless you're Syrian, in which case you have the miracle that we recognize that they had. Or you're an advanced art scroll follower, correct. Okay, so we are up to Perek Chaf Aleph, the Parsha, the Perek of the Kohanim. Yesterday, Bruce raised the issue of why do we care if the Kohanim aren't doing the Avodah? Why do they have any mitzvos as man as that? So the truth is, I had forgotten it at that time, but the Ramban points this out in the beginning of the Parsha. The Parsha, it says, Emor el ha-Kohanim b'nei Aaron. So what is the Kohanim, the b'nei Aaron? So the Ramban mentions that when it talks about the korbanos, so it says moral Aaron veil banav, right? Speak to Aaron and his children. What's the point that? Why does it add in here Kohanim? That Kohanim have a status that is independent of korbanos. It's not just about korbanos; it's also about their separate status. What is that separate status? So we'll get into this later. But the idea of being the Torah teachers, etc. So the issues of the tumah, the issues of their special status, is not just reflective of because they bring korbanos, therefore we have to do this. But rather, they have specific status as teachers and learners and inspirational figures amongst Klal Yisrael, and that is actually designated in the Parsha itself, and the fact that they are referred to as Kohanim, and not simply as the B'nai Aaron Uvanov. He continues on here in the Sefer Birchas Yitzchak, which is by Rabbi Menachem Ganek. It's his Chidushim from... I'm not sure if it's him or from the Rav. I thought it was from the... He just says him. Okay. So Rabbi Ganak points out in his Sefer, that he quotes from the Sefer Kli Chemda, that the Kli Chemda observes that there actually are independent dinim as well. That in theory, the Gemara in Makos tells us that a Kohen who is a Chalal, so we talked about Chalals earlier this week, Chalal is a Kohen who his lineage has been disrupted, in which case he loses the status of Kahuna. But the Gemara in Makos actually tells us that if a Chalal does Avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, the Avoda is accepted. Got that? Right, the Avodah is still accepted. As opposed to other din, that a Chalal doesn't get any of the other mitzvos in terms of Isurim of Tumah Vatara, those kinds of things don't apply to him.
Is he allowed to be in the Beis HaMikdash?
Well, anyway.
Doing Avodah?
So that then becomes a bit of a dispute. The Gemara, right? So that's one of the issues of does it's kosher. So that's b'dievet l'chachila. So probably b'dievet. It's b'dievet the Gemara is talking about. But anyways, it is acceptable. So in terms of the isurim of kahuna, he loses his status. Right, he loses his status in terms of Tumah Tara. There's no din that a chal can't go to a funeral. There's no din that a chal can't marry a grusha, can't marry a divorcee. But his avoda is still brought. So he quotes the Kli Chemda as saying that there's really two dinim of Kohanim. There's two aspects of the halachos of being a Kohen. On one hand is the aspect of the one bringing the avoda. On the other hand, there is the aspect of being the teacher, the lamdan, etc. And the halachos don't exactly line up from one to another. Now he does say that he brought this once to the Rav, and the Rav didn't like it, and he points out that it's probably based on Machlokas Rishonim, etc. But anyways, that at least let the Kli Chemda stand on his own as pointing out that those two different halachos, actually, those two different aspects of the Huna bring about two different halachic applications as well.
How come when we went,
they were the kings.
What opened up the yeshivas?
Well, in theory, the Kohanim have their Ari Halavim. The cities of the Levim were supposed to be that. They were supposed to be the centers of learning, the centers of commerce. Right? That's where people were going to go. You know, that's where the kosher pizza. That's where the kosher pizza shops probably were.
What about the Shevet Yisachar? How does he fit into this?
Yisachar were independent learners. I don't think we see a halach of them being the teachers. We see them as being independent landowners, and that's because they cut a private deal. At least that's the way that I read it. I mean, they were lucky to find Yisachar that was going to support them, and that's okay if somebody finds it.
The rabbi was it a Shimon? Was the tribe?
There is an idea that Shimon didn't get their own tribe. With Shimon, there is an idea of Shimon doing something. Yes, there is that idea. It's not in the front of my mind to be able to work that in right now. But in theory, the Kohanim were supposed to do it. That's why they had their own areas. That's why they were the Ari Mikla. That's why the people went there. They were scattered around, etc. Right. And, Okay, so there is another aspect here with regard specifically to Tuma. He brings an interesting idea from Rav Moshe Wolfson. Have we quoted Rav Moshe Wolfson at all? Rav Moshe Wolfson is still alive today. He is, I think the story goes, I'm not 100% sure, I believe he was like a 6th grade Rebbe for decades, and was noticed as sort of being a major tzaddik, and I believe now is officially the Mashkiach of Yeshiva Torah Vadas, which is a pretty esteemed position. So he's worked his way up. He has his works, I think we've quoted him in shul a few times. So he has, I saw him quoted. In fact, Rabbi Zev Reichman has a book, Introduction to Hasidic Thought, which we've quoted from. Whether you know it or not, we've quoted from it, and it's based on the teachings from Rav Moshe Wolfson. And I was wondering, where, like, how am I going to find this farmer? I know his farmer out there, but they're hard to get, etc. And then one time I was in my father's study, and he had this, you know, these old computer folders where they were sort of like these cardboard folders where you're able to store files in them. You'd recognize them if you see like these triangle kind of things. I said, and there were 4 books of Emunah Sitecha, plus a couple of other things that were papers bounded together. Like, where did this come from? So, someone that worked for him, we came close with Rav Wolfson, and for my younger brother's bar mitzvah, gave him like the full, all 8 volumes. Now, it wasn't so organized. It was sort of somebody took his sichot, wrote them up, and then divided them up by year. So it was divided up by, so I was like, okay, are you using them? And I was like, no, you can take them. I was like, okay, fine. So I was able to get all of them, but the modern edition was put together, I think, in one sefer, where it sort of collects it together in order. I just have it by year set up. So I wasn't able to find it in my sefer, the entire thing. But Rabbi Simon quotes it. Rabbi Simon quotes a very interesting idea from Rav Moshe Wolfson, that the Gemara tells us, his Sicha in Parshas Kitava. So if I had just Kitava, I'd be able to find it. I had like 6 years worth of Kitava, I wasn't able to find it exactly. But anyways, he says that when Adam HaRishon sinned, so Adam HaRishon, part of the sin of eating from the Eitz Hadas is that he brought Misa Liolam, he brought death into the world. And therefore, not only did death come into the world, but the idea of becoming older got into the world. The idea of advancing towards death became a thing. And that's something as I say, it's better than the alternative, but one should avoid that attitude.
I thought Avram brought that in when he...
Avram brought the idea of looking old. But the idea of getting old, the idea of aging, the idea of things in the world becoming old also, meaning, you know, trees, the leaves falling, trees dying, things like that, that all came from him. And that should be avoided. So therefore the Gemara tells us, Chein David lo aya yashan shasin nishmi, that David never slept 60 breaths in a row. That's what the Gemara says, whatever that means. Because he didn't want to taste the taste of death, right? That sleeping is 1/60th of death, so 60 breaths is considered death, is considered sleeping, and he wanted to avoid that. We avoid that whenever we have children, but yeah, for a couple of months you get a taste of what that's like. But anyways, that's what so there are a couple of things left in the world, however, that one is that has avoided that curse. So the 2 examples he brings here is a place and 2 a thing. So the place is referring to the Eved Shesia, the place where the Aron rests. So the Gemara tells us that lo shalat sham shum zikna v'hisyashus, that no idea of aging impacted that place. Of course, it's a rock, so whatever. But that rock is still the same. That's a place of unending youth. And then the second thing is the Gemara in Maseches Chagiga, where it tells us that the Gemara says that the Pasuk says that al that the Lechem HaPan were placed on the Shulchan HaTahor, the pure Shulchan. What does it mean, the pure Shulchan? Well, obviously it was a Kli in the base of Mikdash that had to be pure. So what do you learn from the idea of pure? That when people would cut the Lechem that were left on the Shulchan, what was the miracle of the Lechem? That they remained fresh the entire week. So what is, they didn't go stale. They didn't get old. They didn't get old. They remained fresh. It remained the place of youth. So much so that when people would come for the Aliyah L'Regel, the Gemara says that people, that the Kohanim would show it off. The Kohanim would show, see, hey, this bread has been laying out there on metal for a week. See, it's still squishy and tastes that's fresh, etc.
That's why they call them showbread.
Okay? I'll take it. As opposed to sweetbreads, which... that's something else, yes. Okay, so therefore, what is the Kohen? So the Kohen represents, especially the Kohen Gadol, who is synonymous with the Beis HaMikdash, synonymous with that place. In fact, the Pasuk that describes the Kohen Gadol not going to a funeral is the same Pasuk that gives an indication that the Kohen Gadol never even left the Beis HaMikdash. The Kohen Gadol represents this idea of unending youth, of unending freshness. And therefore the Kohen had to avoid Tumah. And that, we continue into the other role of the Kohen. The other role of the Kohen was that of a teacher of Torah. And a teacher of Torah, he has to continuously be able, that's the goal of a Rebbe, is in order to always be able to bring the Torah alive, to be able to make the Torah relevant to the next generation, to find the sources, and to then express it to be able to teach the next generation of students that it's not just an old text to them, but that is a live text for them. That is illustrated. He quotes a story here. I'd never seen this story elsewhere. I had heard it a little bit differently in terms of the people involved, but there's a famous story with Rav Shach, that Rav Shach used to give Shir Klalis, I believe, on Tuesdays. I believe that Rav Shach, when he was Rosh Yeshiva Panovich, so Tuesdays was Shir Klali day. And he wouldn't have any meetings. I think Shir Klali was in the afternoon. That Shir Klali is in yeshivas when the Rosh Yeshiva or somebody gives Shir to the entire yeshiva instead of everybody going to the individual Rebbe. It's sort of like a unifying thing where a lot of people try to sneak out the back door and not go. But those that do go, it's sort of the Shir that is given to the entire yeshiva together. So the Rosh Yeshiva of Rav Shach would not have meetings on Tuesday, which became a little complicated as he got a little bit older and started becoming very politically involved during the 90s, probably people here probably remember this, but the 90s and I guess already in the 80s, 90s, etc. Rav Shach was really a political leader of the Haredi movement in Eretz Yisrael, which we still see effects of continuing until today. So he still maintained this and nobody could come and visit him on Tuesday. So apparently one time there was some type of emergency, they tried calling him to pick up, so the government, the Knesset member from the Agudas Yisrael or Degel HaTorah party, whatever it is, came to the yeshiva and sat down next to Rav Shach and says, listen, there's a vote this afternoon, we need to talk about something. And Rav Shach looks at him and says, you know, I don't speak about these things on Tuesdays. To which the person responds saying, listen, I looked outside what your title is. You've talked about that before. I remember hearing the same shir when I was in yeshiva. I'm not sure you said that exactly. But I remember, you've definitely given that shir at least 3 or 4 times. Here is your Sefer Avi Ezri. You have the entire shir written up in the Sefer Avi Ezri already. So why are you spending the entire day preparing? To which Rav Shach responded by saying, because if they just wanted to hear a chiddush in Torah, if the idea was just them to hear something that's in a book already, so then you're right, I could just give them the book to read. But the idea of giving a shir, the idea of having a Rebbe, is that there be a connection with the Masorah. And Masorah has to be given over not just from a book to a person, but from a Rebbe to a Talmud, from somebody who is teaching to somebody who is learning together, so that it's not just seen as something on a page, but rather seen as something that is alive, and therefore I have to, every time I get up to give shir klali, it's not just enough for me to review my notes from a couple of years ago, but to prepare the sugya again from the beginning, to be able to give that entire thing over to the Talmidim. And yes, so that is, and that's what Kohanim represented. The idea, the idea of Marba Torah, Marba Chayim, as the mission Perkei Avos tells us, Ki Heim Chayenu V'Orach Yamenu. That Torah is what allows us to last long days, etc. It gives the Torah is living Eitz Chayim Hilu Machazikim Va. It itself is a living tree that we are all able to hang on to. That is the message of Torah. That is the message of Kohanim. And then, usually in the Sefer Imrei Baruch, Rabbi Simon is mostly quoting things from other people, but here it seems like he is saying this on his own. And that is perhaps what is represented in the story of Yonah. What is the story of Yonah? So Yonah, we know from Yom Kippur, the story of Yonah that goes off to Nineveh, he gets caught in a net, right? Then we know the story of Yonah's youth. The book of Yonah only picks up once he's a writer of Shofet. There is a story of Yonah's youth that is, I would say, explicitly in Tanakh, in a different book. But we don't necessarily know that it's Yonah. The Torah Shabbat Peh fills in that it's Yonah. Yonah was, the Gemara tells us, was the child saved by Eliyahu Hanavi. Right, we know that story. The Eliyahu Navi comes to the house. The child is dead, and the mother complains to Eliyahu and says, "Woe to us that our child is dead." To which Eliyahu comes.
Elisha is also one of Elisha.
Yes.
Elisha and Gaphus.
Yes. So there are, I believe, two stories, yes, okay, to that effect. So Eliyahu Navi takes the child up, and he brings the kid back to life. So the Gemara, so Tosfos itself raises the question, says, hold on, wait, time out, woo! Right? Eliyahu is a Kohen. Right? How is Eliyahu allowed to be in touch with the child? So his answer is, well, Eliyahu was so sure he'd be able to heal the child, so he did it. I would add as well, that this is also an interesting idea, that meaning, a Kohen's allowed to risk his tomb in order to save a life, right? So Tosfos doesn't ask that question. Well, it's a meis mitzvah, but this isn't even getting to the meis mitzvah issue. It wasn't necessarily a meis mitzvah. His mother was there. His mother could have buried him, right? But the Tosfos asks, he was a Kohen, how was he permitted to become tamei lemeis in order to revive him? Now, my quick answer would have been, what's Tosfos' answer? It's an interesting halachic point. Tosfos' answer is, well, Eliyahu was sure the kid would be revived. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't the suffix be enough? If somebody is dead and you have the ability to revive the child, right? So can you tell me that a Kohen wouldn't be able to do the... Better than a mitzvah. Wouldn't the Kohen be able to do the... what's it called?
Resuscitation,
the shocking, right? Would the Kohen be able to do that, right? Bring the person to life, right? So you see a very interesting idea here, right? That once the person is dead, right? It sounds like, I'm just saying this on my own, I didn't look this up in any of the medical sphere or something, but it sounds like once the person is dead, the person is dead. Now, we might bring the person back to life, but it's unclear how pikuach nefesh would apply in that circumstance.
His situation is sui generis, though.
No, I know, but I wouldn't have even gone there. I mean, I think an easier answer would be, well, what if he had the ability to bring the child back to life, right? That would have just been my answer. Why does it have to be obvious it would have worked?
Obviously, so.
Now, I understand, but Tosfos' answer was because he knew al pi nevuah that the child would be resuscitated. Mm-hmm. And what if he didn't know al pi nevuah that would be resuscitated, but he just maybe saw a possibility that it would be resuscitated? That's not enough.
Yeah, sure, it didn't say a lot.
So I don't know if this is applied lahalacha, but it's an interesting thought. It actually brings to something I saw yesterday in preparation for yesterday's shiur. We talked yesterday about a Kohen flying on an airplane, both above a cemetery and also when there's a dead body on board. So we said, right, that there is a, well, when there's a dead body on board, so there is the, right there, you could say that the floor of the plane separates from the body to the Kohen. What about if there is a organ on board? What about if you are transferring an organ, a heart, from one place, not that organ. That would be Sakanas Nefashos, sorry. Right? If somebody is transferring an organ on a plate, which these things happen. The question was raised in a way that it would...
Well, the organ can't die. I mean, you can't transplant a totally dead. It has to have some...
That's why they refer
to it. It has to be some element of life to it.
Right.
If there is total cell death, it would not work.
Right. So we would... But this is interesting because it's not... We would call it dead. Meaning, it, in theory, would be metame. Right? in theory, would be Mitag. We wouldn't say, oh, well, because the heart is still moving a little bit, that it's not considered dead. We assume that such a situation is dead. That's part of the whole brain death controversy, right? The Gemara itself says that, right? If you cut a person's head off, the person's considered dead, even though there's still things that are moving around. So here, the heart is considered dead. Would that be considered tuma? So I saw this online, one of these, one of the Bate Din websites out of Lakewood. So they said, Pashut, it's okay because it's going to be resuscitated. It's not really dead because it has in mind to be used later on. It's a very interesting Kiddush. That's not such a simple matter. And then it also said, and because the organ is being kept underground, therefore there's a separation anyways. Which I'm thinking, I don't know, in all the movies where they seem to be walking around with the thing in the cooler, do they really do that for real? Right, it would be brought on the plane itself with them, I would have thought. But I thought it fit in with this Eliyahu business, that the person that is going to be brought, if the organ to be brought back to life is not considered tummy, so to the body to be brought back to life is not considered tummy anyways. Okay, so anyways, so there's the Yerushalmi that talks, so the Medrash then tells, the Gemara claims that this was Yonah. So the Yerushalmi then says that child that lived was Yonah, and it comments that the Isa Ocham Amar Rebbe Yonah, there's someone in the Yerushalmi named Rebbe Yonah. Yonah ben Amiti mi Ole Regalim Haya. That Yonah ben Amiti was of those people that were Ole Regal, which was a constant issue during the time of the Malachim where Yonah lived. But he was one of the Ole Regalim. V'nichnas l'simchas beis ha-shoeva. And he would go to the simchas beis ha-shoeva. V'sharsa lav ruach ha-kodesh. And there's ruach ha-kodesh that went upon him. L'amedcha, to teach you she'ein ruach ha-kodesh shora ela alev sameach. To tell you that ruach ha-kodesh only rests on a person when their heart is happy. So my time, but why? V'haya k'nogin ha-menagin v'atiya lav ruach elukim. Listen, they would sing the songs. There was Ruach Hashem upon him. And why is it? Why specifically would it be Yonah that would get this? Meaning, he goes to the base Simchas Beis Shuvah. We know everybody's happy at Simchas Beis Shuvah. The Gemara says, I see from here that only a person who is happy is able to achieve Ruach Elokim. And therefore, Yonah got Ruach Elokim. Okay, well, what about the other guys? Right? Why would only Yonah be able to achieve that at the Simchas Beis HaShoeva? Right? So Yonah going to the Simchas Beis HaShoeva, so other people also should be able to get. What specifically is there about Yonah? So there is an interesting medrash that's quoted by Rabbeinu Bechaye. It's quoted by Rabbi Simon here. When Hashem divided up the waters, this is day two of creation. Hashem says, takes the water, says, all right, some of you are going up there, some of you are going down there. So the water that was going below had a taina. They say, hey, we want to be up there. We want to be above with the upper waters as opposed to the lower waters. So bevechin disparshu amayim atachtonu min alyonim. So amru oy lanu shelo zachinu lalo slamalo lios krovim lios reinu. That the lower water said, woe unto us that we're stuck going down, and we'd rather be closer to our creator. Ma'asu se izu pneim uvaku tohomus vikshu lalo. So they kind of complained, and they wanted to be raised. Atru garbehen akadosh baruch hu shemar hanusin biyam derech uvmayim azim nesiva garbiyam v'yeshu. That till Hashem sort of rebuked them, Hanosin Biyam, that and said we're going to use the water below, right? Hanosin Biyam there, that the water is used as making a path through the water. Umayim Azim Nesiva, by through the water we're going to be able to make a path. That's a pasuk in Yeshaya. So Amar Lehem Hakadosh Baruch Hu Hol Vilchavodi Asisan Kol Kach Ein Lehen Rishus Lamayim Hal Yonim Lomer Shira Achi Yitlu Rishus Michem. So Hashem said, because the water was helpful to me, you did what I needed, you split when I needed you to split. And you held up into a wall when I needed you to hold up into a wall in the beginning of Sefer Yeshua. So therefore, the upper waters will not be able to give me praise until they get reshus from you. And where do we see that? We read it in this morning's Shir Shalyom. The Pasuk says in this morning's Shir Shalyom, Mikolos Maim Rabim, that the great waters roar, Adirim Mishpureyam, and there's great waves from the water. And what's the next words? Adir Bamarom Hashem. And they give praise. That is then the praise for Hashem. That it's the water below that is what permits the praise to Hashem and not the water above. And below Ode, and the Midrash concludes, that you're also going to be brought on Mizbeach, both in terms of the salt placed on the Mizbeach, the salt comes from the water, as well as in the Nisuch HaMayim, as well as in the water libation ceremony that is being done in the Beis HaMikdash. So what do we see from here? What is the idea of Nisuch HaMayim? So the Simchas Beis HaShoeva was the celebration of the Nisuch HaMayim. So what is the celebration of the Nisuch HaMayim? It's taking the water that was below and saying, and Hashem saying to the water below, yes, you need to be below, and there's things you need to do below, and you're going to sustain life while you are below, but that life that you're able to, but then you also get a spot to be on the base of Migdash, to be in the base of Migdash and be able to be put on the Mizbeach itself. And you who thought you were so low, you'll be able to get to the highest points. And that perhaps was what Yonah saw. Yonah, the one who experienced death, Yonah, the one who had already died when he was younger and was brought back to life, he is able to recognize the distinction between those that are dead and those that are alive and be able to see the tremendous power and potential that lies in those that are alive in order to achieve greatness in terms of their connection and closeness and avodas Hashem. All right, I realize we're a little early, but I guess we'll stop here.